Chapter 36. Department, Richard left us on the very next evening, to begin his new career, and committed Ada to my charge with great love for her, and great trust in me. It touched me then to reflect, and it touches me now, more nearly, to remember having what I have to tell, how they both thought of me, even at that engrossing time. I was a part of all their plans, for the present and the future. I was to write Richard once a week, making my faithful report of Ada, who was to write to him every alternate day. I was to be informed, under his own hand, of all his labors and successes. I was to observe how resolute and persevering he would be. I was to be Ada's bridesmaid when they were married. I was to live with them afterwards. I was to keep all the keys of their house. I was to be made happy forever and a day. And if the suit should make us rich, Esther, which it may, you know, said Richard to crown all. A shade crossed Ada's face. My dearest Ada, asked Richard, why not? It had better declare us poor at once, said Ada. Oh, I don't know about that, returned Richard, but at all events, it won't declare anything at once. It hasn't declared anything in heaven knows how many years. Too true, said Ada. Yes, but, urged Richard, answering what her look suggested, rather than her words, the longer it goes on, gar cousin, the nearer it must be to a settlement one way or other. Now, is not that reasonable? You know best, Richard. But I am afraid, if we trust to it, it will make us unhappy. But, my Ada, we are not going to trust to it, cried Richard gaily. We know it better than to trust to it. We only say that, if it should make us rich, we have no constitutional objection to being rich. The court is, by solemn settlement of law, our grim old guardian, and we are to suppose that, what it gives us, when it gives us anything, is our right. It is not necessary to quarrel with our right. No, said Ada, but it may be better to forget all about it. Well, well, cried Richard, then we will forget all about it. We can sign the whole thing to oblivion. Dom Durden puts on her approving face, and it's done. Dom Durden's approving face, said I, looking out of the box in which I was packing his books, was not very visible when you called it by that name, but it does approve, and she thinks you can't do better. So, Richard said there was an end of it, and immediately began, on no other foundation, to build as many castles in the air as would man the Great Wall of China. He went away in high spirits. Ada and I, prepared to miss him very much, commenced our quieter career. On our arrival in London, we had called with Mr. Jarndyce at Mrs. Jellyby's, but had not been so fortunate as to find her at home. It appeared that she had gone somewhere to a tea drinking, and had taken Miss Jellyby with her. Besides the tea drinking, there was to be some considerable speech making and letter writing on the general merits of the cultivation of coffee, conjointly with natives, at the settlement of Bariabulaga. All this involved, no doubt, sufficient active exercise of pen and ink to make her daughter's part in the proceedings anything but a holiday. It being now beyond the time appointed for Mrs. Jellyby's return, we called again. She was in town, but not at home, having gone to Mile End directly after breakfast on some Borealian business, arising out of a society, called the East London Branch Aid Ramification. As I had not seen Peepy on the occasion of our last call when he was not to be found anywhere, and when the cook rather thought he must have strolled away with the dustman's cart, I now inquired for him again. The oyster shells he had been building a house with were still in the passage, but he was nowhere discoverable, and the cook supposed that he had gone after the sheep. When we repeated, with some surprise, the sheep, she said, oh, yes, on market days he sometimes followed them quite out of town, and came back in such a state as never was. I was sitting at the window with my guardian on the following morning, and Ada was busy writing of course to Richard, when Miss Jellyby was announced, and entered, leading the identical Peepy, whom she had made some endeavors, to render presentable by wiping the dirt in two corners of his face and hands and making his hair very wet, and then violently frizzling it with her fingers. Everything the dear child wore was either too large for him or too small. Among his other contradictory decorations, he had the hat of a bishop and the little gloves of a baby. His boots were, on a small scale, the boots of a plowman, while his legs, so crossed and recrossed with scratches that they looked like maps, were bare below a very short pair of plaid drawers finished off with two frills of perfectly different patterns. The deficient buttons on his plaid frock had evidently been supplied from one of Mr. Jellyby's coats, they were so extremely brazen, and so much too large. Most extraordinary specimens of needlework appeared on several parts of his dress, where it had been hastily mended, and I recognized the same hand on Miss Jellyby's. She was, however, unaccountably improved in her appearance and looked very pretty. She was conscious of poor little Peepy being but a failure after all her trouble, and she showed it as she came in by the way in which she glanced first at him, and then at us. "Oh, dear me," said my guardian. "Do East." Ada and I gave her a cordial welcome, and presented her to Mr. Jarndyce, to whom she said as she sat down, "Ma's compliments, and she hopes he'll excuse her, because she's correcting proofs of the plan. She's going to put out 5,000 new circulars, and she knows you'll be interested to hear that. I have brought one of them with me. Ma's compliments." With which she presented it sulkily enough. "Thank you," said my guardian. "I am much obliged to Mrs. Jellyby. Oh, dear me. This is a very trying wind." We were busy with Peepy, taking off his clerical hat, asking him if he remembered us, and so on. Peepy retired behind his elbow at first, but relented at the sight of sponge cake, and allowed me to take him on my lap, where he sat munching quietly. Mr. Jarndyce then withdrawing into the temporary growlery, Miss Jellyby opened a conversation with her usual abruptness. "We are going on just as bad as ever in Thavies Inn," said she. "I have no peace of my life. Talk of Africa. I couldn't be worse off if I was a, what's his name man and a brother." I tried to say something soothing. "Oh, it's of no use, Miss Summerson," exclaimed Miss Jellyby, "though I thank you for the kind intention all the same. I know how I am used, and I am not to be talked over. You wouldn't be talked over if you were used so. Peepy, go and play at Wild Beasts under the piano." "I shan't," said Peepy. "Very well, you ungrateful, naughty, hard-hearted boy," returned Miss Jellyby with tears in her eyes. "I'll never take pains to dress you any more." "Yes, I will go, Caddy," cried Peepy, who was really a good child, and who was so moved by his sister's vexation that he went at once. "It seems a little thing to cry about," said poor Miss Jellyby apologetically, "but I am quite worn out. I was directing the new circulars till 2 this morning. I detest the whole thing, so that alone makes my head ache till I can't see out of my eyes. And look at that poor unfortunate child. Was there ever such a fright as he is?" Peepy, happily unconscious of the defects in his appearance, sat on the carpet behind one of the legs of the piano, looking calmly out of his den at us, while he ate his cake. "I have sent him to the other end of the room," observed Miss Jellyby, drawing her chair nearer ours, "because I don't want him to hear the conversation. Those little things are so sharp. I was going to say, we really are going on worse than ever. Pa will be a bankrupt before long, and then I hope Ma will be satisfied. There'll be nobody but Ma to thank for it. We said we hoped Mr. Jellyby's affairs were not in so bad a state as that." "It's of no use hoping, though it's very kind of you," returned Miss Jellyby, shaking her head. "Pa told me only yesterday morning, and dreadfully unhappy he is, that he couldn't weather the storm. I should be surprised if he could. When all our tradesmen send into our house any stuff they like, and the servants do what they like with it, and I have no time to improve things, if I knew how, and Ma don't care about anything, I should like to make out how Pa's to weather the storm. I declare if I was Pa, I'd run away. My dear, said I, smiling. Your papa, no doubt, considers his family. Oh, yes, his family is all very fine, Miss Summerson, replied Miss Jellyby. But what comfort is his family to him? His family is nothing but bills, dirt, waste, noise, tumbles downstairs, confusion, and wretchedness. His scrambling home, from week's end to week's end, is like one great washing day, only nothing's washed. Miss Jellyby tapped her foot upon the floor, and wiped her eyes. I am sure I pity Pa to that degree, she said, and am so angry with Ma, that I can't find words to express myself. However, I am not going to bear it, I am determined. I won't be a slave all my life, and I won't submit to be proposed to by Mr. Quayle. A pretty thing, indeed, to marry a philanthropist. As if I hadn't had enough of that, said poor Miss Jellyby. I must confess that I could not help feeling rather angry with Mrs. Jellyby myself, seeing and hearing this neglected girl and knowing how much of bitterly satirical truth there was in what she said. If it wasn't that we had been intimate when you stopped at our house, pursued Miss Jellyby, I should have been ashamed to come here today, for I know what a figure I must seem to you too. But as it is, I made up my mind to call, especially as I am not likely to see you again the next time you come to town. She said this with such great significance, that Ada and I glanced at one another, foreseeing something more. No, said Miss Jellyby, shaking her head. Not at all likely. I know I may trust you too. I am sure you won't betray me. I am engaged. Without their knowledge at home? Said one. Why, good gracious me, Miss Summerson, she returned, justifying herself in a fretful, but not angry manner, how can it be otherwise? You know what Ma is, and I needn't make poor Pa more miserable by telling him. But would it not be adding to his unhappiness, to marry without his knowledge or consent, my dear? Said one. No, said Miss Jellyby, softening. I hope not. I should try to make him happy and comfortable when he came to see me, and Peepy and the others should take it in turns to come and stay with me, and they should have some care taken of them then. There was a good deal of affection in poor Catty. She softened more and more while saying this and cried so much over the unwonted little home picture she had raised in her mind that Peepy, in his cave under the piano, was touched and turned himself over on his back with loud lamentations. It was not until I had brought him to kiss his sister, and had restored him to his place on my lap, and had shown him that Catty was laughing, she laughed expressly for the purpose, that we could recall his peace of mind. Even then it was for some time conditional on his taking us in turns by the chin, and smoothing our faces all over with his hand. At last, as his spirits were not equal to the piano, we put him on a chair, to look out of window, and Miss Jellyby, holding him by one leg, resumed her confidence. It began in your coming to our house, she said. We naturally asked how. I felt I was so awkward, she replied, that I made up my mind to be improved in that respect at all events, and to learn to dance. I told Ma I was ashamed of myself, and I must be taught to dance. Ma looked at me in that provoking way of hers, as if I wasn't in sight, but I was quite determined to be taught to dance, and so I went to Mr. Turveydrop's academy in Newman Street. And was it there, my dear, I began. Yes, it was there, said Catty, and I am engaged to Mr. Turveydrop. There are two Mr. Turveydrops, father and son. My Mr. Turveydrop is the son, of course. I only wish I had been better brought up, and was likely to make him a better wife, for I am very fond of him. I am sorry to hear this, said I must confess. I don't know why you should be sorry, she retorted a little anxiously, but I am engaged to Mr. Turveydrop, whether or no, and he is very fond of me. It's a secret as yet, even on his side, because old Mr. Turveydrop has a share in the connection, and it might break his heart, or give him some other shock, if he was told of it abruptly. Old Mr. Turveydrop is a very gentlemanly man indeed, very gentlemanly. Does his wife know of it? Asked Ada. Old Mr. Turveydrop's wife, Miss Clare? Returned Miss Jellyby, opening her eyes. There's no such person. He is a widower. We were here interrupted by Peepy, whose leg had undergone so much on account of his sister's unconsciously jerking it like a bell rope whenever she was emphatic, that the afflicted child now bemoaned his sufferings with a very low-spirited noise. As he appealed to me for compassion, and as I was only a listener, I undertook to hold him. Miss Jellyby proceeded, after begging Peepy's pardon with a kiss and assuring him that she hadn't meant to do it. That's the state of the case, said Caddy. If I ever blame myself, I still think it's Ma's fault. We are to be married whenever we can, and then I shall go to Pa's office and write to Ma. It won't much agitate Ma, I am only pen and ink to her. One great comfort is, said Caddy with a sob, that I shall never hear of Africa after I am married. Young Mr. Turveydrop hates it for my sake, and if old Mr. Turveydrop knows there is such a place, it's as much as he does. It was he who was very gentlemanly, I think, said one. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.